welcome to the Provider Podcast. I'm Susan Ball. In this week's episode, we'll be focusing on the upcoming general election and what it means for the NHS. The stakes are high. The health service looks certain to be at the centre of debate and voters' concerns. That means close, often critical scrutiny at a time of unprecedented challenges on operational performance, financial pressures and concerns over quality and safety. The health service is really being pushed on productivity too. There are relentless workforce worries and for patients, too many delays. But there are also positive stories to tell of progress and achievement that should be part of the election conversation. In a moment, we'll hear from Anna Quigley, Head of Health and Social Care at Ipsos, who will talk to us about public opinion on the NHS in this crucial election year. But first, let's go to NHS Providers Deputy Chief Executive Saffron Caudry and Head of Policy and Public Affairs Farah Lithgays about how a general election could affect NHS trust and the NHS. Saffron and Farah, thank you for joining us. So we know the government must hold an election by the end of January 2025, but election fever is rife and there's plenty of speculation it could happen much, much sooner. Saffron, so if we start with you, what would a general election mean for the NHS?
Well, I think given all of the conversation that's around at the moment and all of the build-up we have, we know that in a sense, a general election is a seismic event for the NHS. We know that the government of the day has a very large, some might say disproportionate, others not, but a very large impact on how the NHS runs, how it functions, and critically, how it's funded. But I think if we think about the near-term issues, the immediate issues that are facing the NHS, we've got huge financial challenge. We know that there are real issues with demand. We know that we've got significant workforce shortages, even if some of that is improving. And we know we've got a real task on our hands to get ahead of the productivity challenge across the NHS. All of those things, I think, will be impacted by the very immediate calling of a general election, which will turn the NHS into a political football. No matter what happens, the NHS, its future, how it should be funding, what should happen to it will be kicked around. And that's what we've really got to look out for.
Saffron, you mentioned the NHS as a political football there. Has in your experiences and in the past, has that really been the case with the NHS and how it's been treated?
Absolutely. And I think it's fair to say that the NHS is one of those issues that can win or lose an election for particular political parties. You know, if you're of a certain age, you might remember some of the political campaigning in the run-up to various general elections where the focus on waiting lists, the focus on treatment was very much central to the platform on which parties were campaigning. But I think there's also another issue which runs below the surface a bit, but is really, really important to trusts trying to carry out their day job, deliver services for patients, support their staff. And that's the impact of a pre-election period. And we've had it, you know, we've had it for quite some significant time now, kind of awaiting the general election, which is both the kind of short-termist perspective that creeps into decision making, and it happens whatever the political party is in power, very short-termist approach and often kind of knee-jerk reactions in terms of policy decisions. And alongside that, and somewhat paradoxically, we also get quite a lot of decision making paralysis as well. So things kind of to extend the metaphor, kicked into the long grass, and decisions not taken, both of which really impact the day-to-day task of running a health service.
Thanks, Saffron. So you're talking there about the operational, some of the short-term decision-making. I suppose that naturally leads to kind of like the long-term policies of each party. And so, Farah, none of the main political parties have set out their stalls in a manifesto yet, but we've heard and seen so much like in terms of policies being trailed for like the health sector. So in your opinion, like what can we expect from each of the parties with regards to health policy should they win the election and go into government?
There has been a bit of a switch up in the approach we're seeing, particularly from the Conservative Party at the moment, exactly as Saffron says, moving from that short term to the long term. So before Christmas, the focus of the Conservative Party in setting out its policies was really on waiting lists, industrial action, winter, as you might expect. With Victoria Atkins coming in as the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, the refrain that she is pushing is around fairer, faster and simpler. And those are three words we're going to keep on hearing throughout this general election run up now. So looking at fairer outcomes, addressing health inequalities, making things simpler for patients with integrated and joined up care, simpler as well in terms of the bureaucracy that staff and patients alike face, and faster, looking at waiting times and overall NHS performance. With Labour and the Liberal Democrats, things, as you would expect, are really looking longer term, trying to set out their vision should they have a role to play in the next government. So with the Liberal Democrats, their focus really is on prevention, on a whole health approach, and on public health. And with Labour, I would say they're a bit more mixed between their short-term and long-term focus. So they've set out their health mission, which is focused on bringing care closer to home. So a lot more community-based healthcare, also looking at the development of social care, reforming that via a national care service, but also looking more operationally at waiting times, improving elective treatment times as well.
So it's really interesting because you were talking about some of the Labour policies, and if just West Streeting, for example, has adopted a very much kind of like a reform or die approach to the NHS. And I think one of the big kind of concerns perhaps amongst health leaders is that there could be another wholesale reform of the NHS. Is that something that could potentially happen if Labour comes into power, do you think?
They've said that they won't do that. However, I would say it's always a risk. The Institute for Government did some really interesting work a few years ago where they looked at how long it takes the NHS to settle down after a restructure. And it takes about 2 years. And at the same time, an NHS restructure comes along just about every 2 years. So politicians, because of their short-term view, 5 years or so for the parliamentary term, they don't tend to have the patience to let a restructure settle down. And by the time they've learnt the NHS and how it works, a restructure may be in the making. So for now, with the Labour government, they have said it's that they are committed to not carrying out a reorganisation. But I think we should take that with a bit of a pinch of salt, because there is a learning curve for any new government as they get to know the vastness and the complexity of the NHS.
Thank you. And so, Saffron, NHS providers launched a picture of health a few weeks ago in which we set out 5 shared commitments and calls ahead of the election. Can you talk us through them and in terms of what trust leaders want to see from any kind of future government?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think before I do, I think it's really important to focus on this notion of shared commitments, because I think that for any health service to run effectively, it needs to work in partnership with the government of the day. And we need to remember that there is this notion of the give and the get always in making public services run effectively. And I think that's a really important starting point for the work that we have done. So in terms of the 5 shared commitments and the working together that we want to see, I think the first one really focuses around reaffirming the commitment to the core values of the NHS with the aim of improving health and care and reducing inequalities. And we know that actually the model of the NHS itself has come under fire recently. And I think that the thing we need to do is make sure that we think about how the NHS, you know, accessible and free at the point of use for all, is really going to work over this coming period, and how we need to look at not just the day-to-day operational in the NHS, but also focus on prevention, early intervention and integration, that watchword that we talk about all the time, along with collaboration, so that we make the NHS a more sustainable proposition, and that we actually secure that longer term social and economic return on the investment that we put into the NHS. And that's a critical part of that give and get, that shared commitment. So that's the first one. The second one is absolutely fundamental. If you hear NHS providers talking about anything, it will be about capital. So we are saying that the second shared commitment should be to building a new infrastructure programme for the NHS. We've got to make sure that we eliminate that £11 billion backlog in maintenance, and that we systematically renew facilities, technology, estates. So infrastructure isn't just about buildings. Buildings are really important, but it's also about our digital infrastructure. And that will deliver for patients and staff, and that's fundamental. And we know that it has a significant impact on the quality of care and critically on the productivity of the NHS. So,
Catherine, can I just come in there? Because you mentioned around like digital and the technology and the investment there. And so obviously with the budget, we've got a £3.4 billion investment in digital and in technology, and that should in time obviously filter down into the NHS. And so what would you expect to see from that in terms of the impact on patients? Because obviously that kind of then, we've obviously got some additional investment in that element of the infrastructure, but still nothing to the level of what we want for capital in terms of buildings and kind of bricks and mortar, really, have we?
Yeah, exactly. And I think there are all sorts of things that digital investment can deliver. I mean, fundamentally, I would take us back to the fact that if we're going to have digital investment, we basically do need the right buildings to house our digital investment. And we do need to make sure that, you know, when we're talking about digital investment, we're also able to treat people in the circumstances that they would want to be treated. But I think digital investment is really important for safety. It's really important for streamlining care. It's really important for helping us to make sure that, you know, patients don't have to unnecessarily come into hospital for appointments, that we can do that in different ways. So there are all sorts of elements where digital investment will help, along with things like artificial intelligence. But for my money, it's about getting the basics right, both in terms of digital. Everyone needs an electronic patient record across their organisation, and one that's able to be shared with other public services. And everyone needs the right kind of buildings fundamentally in order for good treatment to be delivered. And those are some of the real basics of an infrastructure programme, of which digital investment is a key part.
And I interrupted you when you were like, you're about to start on your third, on the third of our shared commitments. So I'll let you get back into your flow.
Thank you. And yes, the third shared commitment, unsurprisingly, I suppose, for many is around workforce. And we think it's absolutely critical that together we work with the government to nurture a thriving health and care workforce. So we want to see the NHS long-term workforce plan, which was developed by NHS England. We want to see a commitment to that and a real redoubling of efforts to ensure that the equality, diversity and inclusion agenda is really pushed through, because it's absolutely critical for the workforce and it's critical for the care that patients receive. And we know that if we do this, if we push through the long-term workforce plan and if we focus on EDI, we will create greater capacity and capability to deliver not just day-to-day patient care, but improvements in patient care. And linked to that, I think, is our fourth shared commitment, which is around championing a culture of openness, improvement and innovation. We know that learning cultures and investing in continuous improvement are really fundamental on safety. They're fundamental to the quality of care, and they're fundamental to productivity and the experience of staff as well. And we know that without that focus on the culture, it's really difficult to bring about the changes that we need to bring about across the NHS. And then the final shared commitment is a really, really important one, which is about being able to provide care in the right place at the right time. So this is about meeting more of patients' needs in the community, in their own homes, in different settings. And it's about creating a robust social care sector. So if we're talking about the general election, we're talking about issues that political parties are ducking, I would say the reform and funding of social care is top amongst them. And we know that without those changes and without being able to move care into different settings, we won't be able to support the performance and sustainability of the whole health and care system. So in a nutshell, if we can move care closer to where people are, and if we can make sure that the wider services that are needed are in place, then we have a much better chance of ensuring high quality healthcare.
Safin, you mentioned workforce as one of the shared commitments, and I just wanted to talk to you about industrial action, which is a seemingly intractable problem. And so obviously, depending on what happens with the timing of the election, I know that in terms of like ballots and kind of deals being done, etc., there is a real risk, isn't there, that industrial action could become an issue for the next government, whether that is Labour or if it's Conservative. But it's one of those problems that just we can't seem to resolve in the way that we would hope to, really, is there?
Absolutely. I mean, fundamental, you know, creating, nurturing a thriving health and care workforce, which is what we want to see happen. You know, there's a big roadblock in the way at the moment, and that is the industrial action, because it, you know, without resolving the challenges there, without resolving pay terms and conditions for key groups of staff, then it's impossible to move forward. And we know that it's not just about pay, it's also about the challenges of the jobs that people are doing at the moment. It's about demand, it's about the conditions they're working in, and it's also about the NHS needing to change and modernise. So it's about flexibility, whether that's types of roles, whether that's hours worked, whether that's the nature of how you undertake your training, all of those things need to come into play.
So also within a picture of health, we also talk about how the government needs to create a next generation NHS. So Ferelith, what does that mean to you? And Safin, obviously, do come in.
There's a bit of a dual meaning in it for me. The narrative over the last few years has been, you know, the NHS was created in 1948, we need a 21st century service. This to me is our way of making it a bit more tangible, you know, an NHS 2.0, an NHS which is part of the network of public services, as Safron describes, which is modern, which has the technology it needs, and it can provide the medical treatments that are now available. It is also, and this is the second part, it's the NHS for the next generation. We have immediate patient and community needs that we need to fulfil, and we need to make sure that the NHS continues to develop and evolve alongside those patients and communities so we can keep on serving them. So it puts them at the heart of it as well, and encourages a slightly longer term thinking, going beyond the next parliamentary term, but without putting the weight of a whole century on top of them either.
Safran?
Yeah, and I think there's something really important here as well about, you know, comes back to the give and the get and the shared commitment for the next generation, which is about the social and economic value that the NHS delivers to the wider community, not just in terms of its kind of, if you want to say, the day job that the NHS does, which is about health care, health treatment, and hopefully health prevention, but it's also about tackling issues like employment, like research, like innovation. It's also about thinking about those broader issues which impact on health, like worklessness, homelessness, and how we are developing children and young people, how we are looking after older people. So there are broader issues at play here as well, as alongside the kind of day-to-day treatment element.
We're now joined by Anna Quigley, Head of Health and Social Care at Ipsos.
Anna, you recently published some data from your Issues Index, which tracks changes in public opinion over time. Your most recent polling revealed some interesting findings about what people identified as the most pressing issues facing Britain. Could you talk us through the findings?
So, as you said, Issues Index is something that we do every single month, and we ask people what are the biggest issues facing the country. And what we've seen in the last month is that concerns about the NHS have surpassed worries about inflation and the economy. So it's now the most mentioned issue facing Britain. So we've got over a third of people saying it's a big concern for the country. And it's only the second time that the NHS has topped the Issues Index since before the pandemic. The other time was in January 23. So this is something that we see in the run-up to an election. Quite often, if you look at the data, as I say, it's every month and it goes back years and years. So in the run-up to elections, we often see a spike for the NHS as an issue. But I do think this time it is also likely to be a sign of genuine worries about the NHS. We know that people are talking about, or we know that there's lower satisfaction, and we also know that people are hearing all of those stories in the media about strikes, about the state of hospitals in terms of the estate, but also the waiting list, the waiting times in A&E and so on. So I think it really does represent something that's worth taking notice of.
That's so interesting. And then you mentioned some of the topics there already, so around like industrial action, investment in buildings, waiting times, and it would be great if you could maybe share some more like what you think the key policy issues are within health that are likely to be important for voters as we head into that general election period.
Yeah, I'd say the top two are access and staff, and of course those two things are linked. So in terms of access, what we've seen in lots of our patient experience work is a real decline in experiences of access. So in terms of quality, that's broadly holding up, but we're seeing really, really significant changes in sort of ratings of access to different services. We've also seen in some recent polling that we've got more people that are dissatisfied than satisfied with access, and that's across all different services. So it's GP appointment, it's routine hospital appointments, it's urgent and emergency care, mental health, also dentistry as well is in there. And they're also concerned that it's going to get worse. So 6 in 10 people think that NHS waiting lists are going to get worse over the next few years. And that's worse than any other area that we ask about in terms of public services. So ahead of things like cost of living and housing. So secondly, I mentioned staff. They're absolutely central in public's concerns. So it's about increasing numbers, because that will in turn help with the waiting list and the access issue. But it's also about looking after them. So people talk about reducing the pressure on them, reducing working hours, paying them better. So half of people say that they're dissatisfied with the way in which NHS staff are treated at the moment.
That's really interesting in the context of industrial action. And I wondered if you'd had done any polling on that in terms of where the public are on that issue.
Yes, and that's something that I do think has been quite a consistent theme throughout all of our polling for on the industrial action. So we've been asking about support or opposition for the people who are striking, for the groups who are striking. And what we've seen throughout is that support for any NHS staff group is higher than any of the other sort of professional groups that we've asked about. I think support is waning ever so slightly in our most recent polling, but it's still, there's still more people supporting it than opposing it, and they are still more supportive of any NHS group than they are of any other professional group.
You also mentioned quality and how that was holding up relatively stable in your polling. Can you talk us a bit more about that? Because that's quite an interesting finding then, isn't it? That there's concern around access, but quality in terms of like the care that they're receiving is roughly around the same. Okay.
Yeah, so I'll give you an example from the GP patient survey. So this is a survey that's run for 18 years. And what we saw prior to the pandemic was a very slow, steady decline in terms of ratings of access, but quality, so things like the rating of the individual, the interaction with the healthcare professional, so things like, did they meet their needs, were they good at listening to them, those sorts of things, did they give them dignity and respect, all of those things remained high, above 90%, very, very high. after the pandemic, so in 22, we saw sharp declines in access, and we also started to see declines in those quality measures, the things that are about the individual interaction. We started to see those go down a little bit, but actually this year, in the most recent results, in this year, I say the most recent ones, which was actually summer 23, we've seen those stabilise, and a couple of them have even gone up. So those quality sort of markers are really holding up. It's access where we're seeing real problems.
So it might be fair to say that some patients are struggling to access services, but when they do, they are happy with the care that they're being provided by their healthcare professional or the service more broadly.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely what we're seeing in the survey results at the moment.
Really interesting. And you were mentioning that the NHS does tend to be quite a focal point as an issue for voters within the election. So how do you expect, or how do you think it will play out in the upcoming election campaign? Like, what are you expecting to see, just given your previous polling? What's on the cards?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So we regularly ask people, what's the most important issue in helping you decide who to vote for? And health, so the most recent time we asked it, which is last month, health was the top issue on 30%. But that's not unusual. So it's one of the things that always becomes an issue. People always care about it. I do think what's different this time is that interest in it, and that just sort of general worry, because it's so important, is also coinciding with real concerns about things like staff, about waiting times, about all of those things. So I do think it's going to feature really heavily, and we will see people using it as a way of deciding their vote. Absolutely.
Yeah. And do you tend to see a shift in how political parties approach health in your polling, particularly like as the election campaign proceeds?
What we tend to see is that Labour traditionally are seen as the party who are better on the NHS, and Conservatives are seen as the party who are better on the economy. And we've not seen that to quite the same extent at the moment. So the Labour, yes, still definitely seen as the party of the NHS, but the economy one is a little bit more confused now, and people are slightly less sure. So I do think that interaction between whether the Conservative Party are seen as strong on the economy is actually going to be quite important as well.
Really fascinating. And yeah, is there anything else that you'd like to share, just in terms of any interesting trends from your polling recently in terms of health and kind of what we can see in the upcoming months?
I think the biggest thing for me, and it's something that I know is in your election manifesto, I noticed some of the commitments and the concept of the next generation NHS, I think that's really going to resonate. So what we're hearing more qualitatively, but it's backed up by some of those quant trends that I was talking about, is we're hearing people who are concerned about whether the NHS will be there for them in the future and for their children. That's what we hear quite a lot. So I'd sum it up as a concern about the state of the NHS at the moment, particularly around access, as we were saying, but also a recognition that the NHS was designed 75 years ago and isn't necessarily the one that you would design for the population that we have at the moment. And there's a recognition that the NHS will have to change, and they want it to change, and they are ready for it, and they are ready to embrace some of that change. So we've got 3/4 of people saying the NHS needs to make big changes. Most of those say it also needs a lot more money. Some of them say it just needs to change, but there's a real sort of commitment to the future of the NHS and making sure that it will be there for future generations.
That's really interesting that such a high proportion of the people you've spoken to are obviously still supportive of the NHS, but see the case for change. What kind of change do you think that they want to see, and like, what are they prepared to kind of back, I suppose?
Oh, a full range of things. So at the sort of more immediate level, I'd say the productivity announcement that we heard as part of the budget is likely to go down well. So yes, people think it needs more funding, but it also needs to change. And some of that is down to perceptions of waste and inefficiency, rightly or wrongly. So the sorts of things we hear people talk about are turning up for an appointment and actually it's been cancelled, but they didn't get the letter in time, those sorts of things, notes not being in with the right professional. So they sort of think those sorts of things do need to change. But I think we're also hearing about much more substantial changes to the way in which services run. So moving more services out of hospital and doing more things in the community, using digital tech much more to help people stay out of hospital and manage their conditions at home. These are the sorts of things that people are willing to embrace. They worry about, will we leave some people behind? They worry about how well it will work for everybody.
Yeah.
And this idea about the NHS being available and providing services to everybody equally based on need. But on the whole, they recognise that, you know, we do need to do things differently, and they're willing to embrace that.
So there were some interesting announcements in the budget recently around additional investment for the NHS. Are you seeing, how do you, has that kind of played through in terms of public opinion with for the NHS? Like, has it registered, do you think, or is it too soon to tell?
I'd say it's too soon to tell. What we do know is that consistently over the last few years, people have been saying that the NHS needs more money, and they are very supportive of anything that puts more money into the NHS. For example, the health and social care levy, when that was a thing, people were very supportive of it before it came out, but also once it started to have effect. So they were pleased about it. But I think you're right, it's too early to tell. And what I suspect from the polling we've done and from the qualitative work we've done is that people will want to see an impact from that funding. So, as I said, very supportive of more funding going into the NHS, but do think it needs to make changes, and therefore they want to see results from that as well.
Some really interesting reflections from Saffron, Farrellis and Anna there. A reminder that you can join in the conversation and subscribe to the podcast by following us on X, formerly known as Twitter, and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast. Thank you.